This is the listening paper of the year 2016 National Examination in English. There are 5 tasks in the paper. You will hear the first task only once and all the other tasks twice. Turn to task 1. Task 1. You are going to hear an iPhone application developer talking about his job. You will hear the recording only once. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, complete the sentences. Write no more than 3 words in each gap. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the sentences.
Hello everyone, my name is Thomas Suarez. I've always had a fascination for computers and technology, and I made a few apps for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. I'd like to share a couple with you today. My first app was a unique fortune teller called Earth Fortune that would display different colors of Earth depending on what your fortune was. And my favorite and most successful app is Bustin' Jeeber, which is a Justin Bieber whack-a-mole. I created it because a lot of people at school disliked Justin Bieber a little bit, so I decided to make the app. So I went to work programming it, and I released it just before the holidays in 2010. A lot of people ask me, how did I make these? A lot of kids these days like to play games, but now they want to make them, and it's difficult. Because not many kids know where to go to find out how to make a program. Where do you go to find out how to make an app? Well, this is how I approached it. This is what I did. First of all, I've been programming in multiple other programming languages to get the basics down, such as Python, C, Java, etc. And then Apple released the iPhone, and with it, the iPhone Software Development Kit. This opened up a whole new world of possibilities for me. And after playing with the software development kit a little bit, I made a couple apps. I made some test apps. One of them happened to be Earth Fortune. And I was ready to put Earth Fortune on the App Store. And so I persuaded my parents to pay the $99 fee to be able to put my apps on the App Store. They agreed, and now I have apps on the App Store. I've gotten a lot of interest and encouragement from my family, friends, teachers, and even people at the Apple Store. And that's been a huge help to me. I've got a lot of inspiration from Steve Jobs. And I started an app club at school. And a teacher at my school is kindly sponsoring my app club. Any student at my school can come and learn how to design an app. This is so I can share my experiences with others. There's these programs called the iPad Pilot Program, and some districts have them. I'm fortunate enough to be part of one. A big challenge is, how should the iPads be used, and what apps should we put on the iPads? So we're getting feedback from teachers at the school to see what kind of apps they'd like. These days, students usually know a little bit more than teachers with the technology. So this is a resource to teachers, and educators should recognize this resource and make good use of it.
This is the end of task 1. Turn to task 2. Task 2. You are going to hear people talking about different topics. You will hear the recording twice. Before you listen, read the topics below. While you listen, match the topics B to K to the speakers and write letters B to K in the table given. There are 2 extra topics you do not need to use. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the topics. Example 0.
In a touchscreen experiment at this lab in Austria, scientists put canines to the test. They showed dogs pictures of the eye or mouth area of human faces that had either happy or angry expressions. Half the dogs got a treat for nosing an angry face, the other half were rewarded for touching happy faces. Then came the test.
10.
After a decade in space and 4 years orbiting Mercury, the little spacecraft that could will finally end its mission with a bang. NASA's Messenger craft has gone far and above its original mission. It was only meant to last for a year, and it's going to crash land onto the planet. It's been an undeniable success, and the probe has transmitted some of the most breathtaking images of space back to Earth.
11.
If we go back perhaps 3 billion years and take a look at Mars, Mars was a very different planet. It had an extensive atmosphere. And in fact, it had what we believe was a huge ocean, perhaps as large as 2/3 of the northern hemisphere. And that ocean may have been as much as a mile deep. So Mars indeed, 3 billion years ago, had extensive water resources.
12.
You're looking at one of the oldest fragments of the Quran ever discovered. It's written on parchment, most likely made from sheep or goat skin, and it's been dated by experts as being more than 1,300 years old. And that makes it among the earliest known fragments of the Quran anywhere in the world. And it's here in the University of Birmingham.
13.
We have a lot of lane closures and road work for this weekend, so let's get right to it. Now, first off, the causeway has been causing quite a headache for drivers with that new elevated lane shift. Now, the good news is those two southbound exit lanes are open. And also, 6th Street is open to make that right turn to southbound causeway. So good news for those of you who usually take the causeway. You still might hit some slowdowns, so you might want to tack on maybe 10 extra minutes.
14.
This new map has revealed an almost complete medieval city, starting with the habitations area where people lived.
That habitations area was right here. By using ground-penetrating radar, they've discovered around 100 dwellings beneath my feet, including several kilns where they used to cook, all showing that this was once a vibrant city.
15.
One member of Google's autonomous fleet recently had an encounter with police for going too slow. On November 12th, a traffic officer with the Mountain View Police Department in California noticed the car causing a bit of a backup. According to the police, the car was traveling at 24 miles per hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. As the officer approached the slow moving car, he realized it was a Google autonomous vehicle.
Listen again and check your answers. 10.
After a decade in space and 4 years orbiting Mercury, the little spacecraft that could will finally end its mission with a bang. NASA's Messenger craft has gone far and above its original mission. It was only meant to last for a year, and it's going to crash land onto the planet. It's been an undeniable success, and the probe has transmitted some of the most breathtaking images of space back to Earth.
11.
If we go back perhaps 3 billion years and take a look at Mars, Mars was a very different planet. It had an extensive atmosphere. And in fact, it had what we believe was a huge ocean, perhaps as large as 2/3 of the northern hemisphere. And that ocean may have been as much as a mile deep. So Mars indeed, 3 billion years ago, had extensive water resources.
12.
You're looking at one of the oldest fragments of the Quran ever discovered. It's written on parchment, most likely made from sheep or goat skin, and it's been dated by experts as being more than 1,300 years old. And that makes it among the earliest known fragments of the Quran anywhere in the world. And it's here, in the University of Birmingham.
13.
We have a lot of lane closures and road work for this weekend, so let's get right to it. Now, first off, the causeway has been causing quite a headache for drivers with that new elevated lane shift. Now, the good news is those two southbound exit lanes are open. And also, 6th Street is open to make that right turn to southbound causeway. So good news for those of you who usually take the causeway. You still might hit some slowdowns, so you might want to tack on maybe 10 extra minutes.
14.
This new map has revealed an almost complete medieval city, starting with the habitations area where people lived.
That habitations area was right here. By using ground-penetrating radar, they've discovered around 100 dwellings beneath my feet, including several kilns where they used to cook, all showing that this was once a vibrant city.
15.
One member of Google's autonomous fleet recently had an encounter with police for going too slow. On November 12th, a traffic officer with the Mountain View Police Department in California noticed a car causing a bit of a backup. According to the police, the car was traveling at 24 miles per hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. As the officer approached the slow-moving car, he realized it was a Google autonomous vehicle.
This is the end of Task 2. Turn to Task 3. Task 3. You are going to hear a talk about how science fiction got its sound. You are going to hear the recording twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, tick the correct answer, A, B, or C. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 45 seconds to read the sentences.
No doubt during this Halloween season, you'll hear some movie or some recording that has this familiar yet eerie sound. That sound gave birth to the greatest gift from engineers to the arts, the electronic synthesizer. The synthesizer began in the 1920s with Professor Leon Theremin. In a Leningrad engineering lab, he played around with the latest technology, radio. It fascinated Theremin because radio changed electricity into sound. He brought two parts of the radio close together so they made a sound like the squeal from putting a microphone too near a speaker. This propelled him, in his own words, to give these sounds a musical soul. He built an instrument where instead of physically bringing the two parts together, the performer's body would create the squeal. He would just wave his hands in front of the instrument, plucking music from the air. You've likely heard the theremin, as the instrument became known, in the 1950s sci-fi classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still. But well before that, Theremin toured the world and captured headlines. The New York Times called it ether music. The Chicago Tribune said that Theremin mysteriously reproduces music. Einstein called it as significant as when primitive man produced sound from a bowstring. The instrument made quite a splash until 1938, when Theremin disappeared abruptly. Kidnapped by Soviet agents, he was sent to a labor camp until he agreed to work for the KGB. But Leon Theremin had planted a seed. In the late 1950s, a 14-year-old boy built a theremin from plans he found in a magazine. By age 20, he began making them commercially, selling enough to pay for his engineering education. The student, Robert Moog, used what he'd learned about electronic music from the theremin and built in 1964 the world's first synthesizer. With Moog's synthesizer, the child of Leon Theremin's wonderful instrument, electronic music became world famous with one of the best-selling classical albums of all time, Switched on Bach.
Listen again and check your answers.
No doubt during this Halloween season, you'll hear some movie or some recording that has this familiar yet eerie sound. That sound gave birth to the greatest gift from engineers to the arts, the electronic synthesizer. The synthesizer began in the 1920s with Professor Leon Theremin. In a Leningrad engineering lab, he played around with the latest technology, radio. It fascinated Theremin because radio changed electricity into sound. He brought two parts of the radio close together so they made a sound like the squeal from putting a microphone too near a speaker. This propelled him, in his own words, to give these sounds a musical soul. He built an instrument where instead of physically bringing the two parts together, the performer's body would create the squeal. He would just wave his hands in front of the instrument, plucking music from the air. You've likely heard the theremin, as the instrument became known, in the 1950s sci-fi classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still. But well before that, theremin toured the world and captured headlines. The New York Times called it ether music. The Chicago Tribune said that theremin mysteriously reproduces music. Einstein called it as significant as when primitive man produced sound from a bowstring. The instrument made quite a splash until 1938, when theremin disappeared abruptly. Kidnapped by Soviet agents, he was sent to a labor camp until he agreed to work for the KGB. But Leon Theremin had planted a seed. In the late 1950s, a 14-year-old boy built a theremin from plans he found in a magazine. By age 20, he began making them commercially, selling enough to pay for his engineering education. The student, Robert Moog, used what he'd learned about electronic music from the theremin and built in 1964 the world's first synthesizer. With Moog's synthesizer, the child of Leon Theremin's wonderful instrument, electronic music became world famous with one of the best-selling classical albums of all time, Switched on Bach.
This is the end of Task 3. Turn to Task 4. Task 4. You are going to hear a man answering a list of questions about people confusing two books, The Girl on the Train by B. Hawkins and Girl on a Train by A. Waynes. You will hear the recording twice. Before you listen, read the questions below. While you listen, match the questions B to L to the answers and write letters B to L in the table given. There are two extra questions you do not need to use. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the questions. Example 0.
Well, through a little of my own experience, really, this is one of those stories that I got the book from my mother, who had read Miss Wayne's book, passed it over to me. I read it in its entirety, and it wasn't until after that that we realized, hey, wait a second, there's another book out there that people are actually talking about.
24.
No, what's funny about this story is the plots are somewhat similar. They're both set in contemporary London with, you know, female authors and female protagonists and trains.
25.
I talked to a lot of people that have read the book. I actually spent some time on the Amazon reviews. An incredible number of people were buying the wrong book. And it seems like mostly they were buying the ebook, right? You go on Amazon, you click the first Girl on a Train book you see on your Kindle, and maybe you never look at the cover again when you're reading, so you don't realize that it's a different author, you don't realize it's different.
26.
Miss Waynes wrote her book, published it in 2013, and really hadn't gotten much attention at all until a couple weeks after Miss Hawkins' books hit the shelves and sort of flying off the shelves. I mean, she sold over 6.5 million copies.
27.
Miss Waynes has had a booming year for herself. Her writing had always been a hobby for her. She sold over 30,000 copies, she told me, of the book this year. You know, we didn't get a dollar figure on it, but she's not doing too poorly, and she's excited. She's got another book coming out.
28.
We've seen this happen before, where a young author wrote a book that Stephen King then published a book with the same title. She did really well, and now she has a new book out this year that's doing very well. In part because she had become a little bit famous with the Stephen King mishap.
29.
I talked to several people who have showed up at book clubs, and they started talking about The Girl on the Train, the bestseller, and about this alcoholic woman who's trying to find out about her ex-husband. And the readers I talked to were like, hey, wait a second, that's not the book I read. What are you talking about? One woman who I talked to actually liked Ms. Waynes' book better than Ms. Hawkins' book and made the club read Ms. Waynes' book instead.
30.
They both had, I would say, their own attributes. I'm not actually sure my mother's read the Ms. Hawkins' book yet. Each had its own readability, and they're both sort of page turners. I really wanted to get to the end of both of them.
Listen again and check your answers. 24?
No, what's funny about this story is the plots are somewhat similar. They're both set in contemporary London with, you know, female authors and female protagonists and trains.
25.
I talked to a lot of people that have read the book. I actually spent some time on the Amazon reviews. An incredible number of people were buying the wrong book. And it seems like mostly they were buying the ebook, right? You go on Amazon, you click the first Girl on a Train book you see on your Kindle, and maybe you never look at the cover again when you're reading, so you don't realize that it's a different author, you don't realize it's different.
26.
Miss Waynes wrote her book, published it in 2013, and really hadn't gotten much attention at all until a couple weeks after Miss Hawkins' books hit the shelves and sort of flying off the shelves. I mean, she sold over 6.5 million copies.
27.
Miss Waynes has had a booming year for herself. Her writing had always been a hobby for her. She sold over 30,000 copies, she told me, of the book this year. You know, we didn't get a dollar figure on it, but she's not doing too poorly, and she's excited. She's got another book coming out.
28.
We've seen this happen before, where a young author wrote a book that Stephen King then published a book with the same title. She did really well, and now she has a new book out this year that's doing very well. In part because she had become a little bit famous with the Stephen King mishap.
29.
I talked to several people who have showed up at book clubs, and they started talking about The Girl on the Train, the bestseller, and about this alcoholic woman who's trying to find out about her ex-husband. And the readers I talked to were like, hey, wait a second, that's not the book I read. What are you talking about? One woman who I talked to actually liked Ms. Waynes' book better than Ms. Hawkins' book and made the club read Ms. Waynes' book instead.
30.
They both had, I would say, their own attributes. I'm not actually sure my mother's read the Ms. Hawkins' book yet. Each had its own readability, and they're both sort of page turners. I really wanted to get to the end of both of them.
This is the end of Task 4. Turn to Task 5. Task 5. You are going to hear a talk about having talent. You will hear the talk twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, complete the sentences. Write no more than 3 words in each gap. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the sentences.
In my first college poetry class, we were supposed to write in meter based on model poems by Yeats and Pound. My efforts frustrated both me and the professor. I recall one of my poems about the whooshing sounds of cars in rain. After the last session, I picked up my work at his office. Knees shaking, I asked, "Do I have any talent?" He was a kind person. He pushed his scraggly hair behind his ears as if he were thinking. I'd earned a B-minus, even though I did every assignment and missed no classes. "Probably not," he said softly, looking down. "Thank you," I replied, and walked back to my dorm. I felt like a grafted apple tree, part of me dejected, another part defiant and disbelieving. The defiant part led me to another poetry workshop the following year. This time, students drove the discussion, and we read contemporary poems. I earned an A. Many years later, that professor told me that every student who did the work in his classes earned an A. His approach was as encouraging as the first instructor's was discouraging, but from that discouragement, I learned that teachers don't hold the keys to their students' talent. I believe that every human being is born with talent for making art, visual, literary, kinesthetic, or musical. Some lucky souls are born with multiple talents. And people gravitate towards subjects they have a gift for, so nearly everyone in a writing workshop has writing talent. But no one, not even the writer, can predict if or when talent might bloom into art that others recognize as good. Some people bloom early, others late, some not at all. In the latter category are those whose economic circumstances permit no leisure and no materials for art. Instead of painting canvases, Alice Walker's mother created gardens. Artists must have enough ego to make art and enough humility to improve it. They must be open to change. They must be their own toughest critics and be able to absorb the criticism they need to improve. Yet they must also be sustained by their joy in making. That quality, call it grit, got me through many years of writing poems without recognition and despite discouragement. My aunt said, "Why write if you're not getting published?" I've been teaching creative writing for more than 30 years now. Students sometimes ask me, "Do I have talent?" I tell them my story, and I quote Joyce Carol Oates, "There's only the work." And then I say, "Of course you have talent, but you must not need praise." I tell them, "Make art regardless of whether anyone approves or even notices."
Listen again and check your answers.
In my first college poetry class, we were supposed to write in meter based on model poems by Yeats and Pound. My efforts frustrated both me and the professor. I recall one of my poems about the whooshing sounds of cars in rain. After the last session, I picked up my work at his office. Knees shaking, I asked, "Do I have any talent?" He was a kind person. He pushed his scraggly hair behind his ears as if he were thinking. I'd earned a B-minus, even though I did every assignment and missed no classes. Probably not, he said softly, looking down. Thank you, I replied, and walked back to my dorm. I felt like a grafted apple tree, part of me dejected, another part defiant and disbelieving. The defiant part led me to another poetry workshop the following year. This time, students drove the discussion, and we read contemporary poems. I earned an A. Many years later, that professor told me that every student who did the work in his classes earned an A. His approach was as encouraging as the first instructor's was discouraging, but from that discouragement, I learned that teachers don't hold the keys to their students' talent. I believe that every human being is born with talent for making art, visual, literary, kinesthetic, or musical. Some lucky souls are born with multiple talents. And people gravitate towards subjects they have a gift for, so nearly everyone in a writing workshop has writing talent. But no one, not even the writer, can predict if or when talent might bloom into art that others recognize as good. Some people bloom early, others late, some not at all. In the latter category are those whose economic circumstances permit no leisure and no materials for art. Instead of painting canvases, Alice Walker's mother created gardens. Artists must have enough ego to make art and enough humility to improve it. They must be open to change. They must be their own toughest critics and be able to absorb the criticism they need to improve. Yet they must also be sustained by their joy in making. That quality, call it grit, got me through many years of writing poems without recognition and despite discouragement. My aunt said, "Why write if you're not getting published?" I've been teaching creative writing for more than 30 years now. Students sometimes ask me, "Do I have talent?" I tell them my story, and I quote Joyce Carol Oates, "There's only the work." And then I say, "Of course you have talent, but you must not need praise." I tell them, "Make art regardless of whether anyone approves or even notices."
This is the end of the listening paper. Now turn to the reading paper.